are back with episode 749 of The Critical Myth. I'm John, your host, and tonight we have...
Jeez, it's just me, Gary from Jackson. How's everybody doing tonight, Dan?
Hopefully they are still well recovered from The Walking Dead and our discussion of it. And we are going to be getting into the discussion of the rest of the week's episode, so there's quite a lot here for us to dig into, so we're going to get right into it, but only after we go through the disclaimer first. So, Gary, if you don't mind.
Yes. If we have a tendency to reveal secrets, upcoming plot devices, as well as everything that has happened in the episodes we're discussing. So if you are not caught up by the time you're listening to this, put us on pause, go check the episode, and then come back. And if you're a glutton for punishment, just listen right through. We'll spoil everything before you ever get a chance to watch it. And we'll probably be smart about it as well.
Yeah, that's right. I think we'll be really smart about it. But there we are. That's just my... All right, we're going to go ahead. We have, like I said, quite a few episodes to get through here because we are definitely neck-deep in the fall season. And we're going to start off here with Luke Cage, Season 1, Episode 4, Step Into the Arena. Luke attempts to save someone from Cottonmouth. Flashbacks feature the events that ultimately resulted in Luke's abilities. That's right, this is essentially an origin episode, an origin story, but the writers managed to give it plenty of layers along the way, at least as far as I was concerned, so I gave it an 8.5, and yes, that means that it is an effective tie with our number 2 and 3 episodes for the week, but since it only had my score to give it any type of weight, it did not quite make the top 3. But it still was a really strong episode, and Luke Cage continues to impress. Next we have Legends of Tomorrow, Season 2, Episode 2, The Justice Society of America. Did you ever think that you'd hear that title thrown out there, Gary?
In a live-action product? No, I never did.
Okay. The Legends travel to Nazi-occupied Paris and are surrounded by the JSA. They discover a time aberration that threatens the JSA, but the JSA doesn't want their help. Meanwhile, Nate tries to prove he should be part of the team. And this one came in at an average of 8.33. Henry gave it an 8.5, saying this show took a smart course of action by getting rid of some of the elements that didn't work through the bulk of the first season. And I agree with that completely. That's what I said for the first episode of the season. They really seem to have stripped it down to the essentials, and they are embracing their cheesiness. But this episode, it had the JSA and a fistfight with Nazis? And a connection to Flashpoint? Come on, that's awesome. So I also gave it an 8.5, and you pretty much gave it the same score. You gave it an 8, but that's close enough. But what were your opinions of this episode, Gary?
Well, I mean, I thought they did a good job introducing the characters, even though at least one of them I sort of think it's not in the right place. Also, I'm still concerned that Nate really still feels shoehorned into here. There's really no sort of organic way that he came into this, and that sort of seems to glare out at the moment. And finally, I miss Rip Hunter. I miss his slightly pompous attitude within this within the group. It's okay, but I just don't see these people traveling through time on their own to right all these wrongs, even with Gideon assisting them in some way or form. I really do hope Rip comes back. I think they need him, even if it's not for the vengeance quest against Savage. And I was happy with the way they sort of wrapped up the first season, and I'll give them a little bit of leeway because they're showing so many cool characters along the way. But I would like to see a purposeful story arc rather than just a wandering.
Yeah. I agree with you about Rip. I don't remember or did not remember any type of news that Arthur Darville was going to be leaving the show.
That's what shocked me. Yeah, that surprised me. But it seems effectively written out. And I'm like,
Yeah, I'm wondering if that is a temporary situation for some kind of outside thing. Maybe he had another job that he had to go do.
Convention.
Something. Yeah. But I'm hoping, like you say, that is a temporary situation, that maybe part of the story is that they can't do this on their own. There certainly was a lot of back and forth between them in this episode in terms of who should be the leadership. So, yeah, this... The show does feel like it lost a little bit something with his absence, but at the same time, I think overall they've gained quite a bit because they seem to be a lot more focused with the storytelling. Just in terms of the fact that, yeah, they seem to recognize what worked last season and they're emphasizing it. They're not trying to force some things that, Hawkgirl, Hawkman, that weren't working. So, we'll see. And I'm still curious how the whole Flashpoint thing is going to keep kind of rearing its ugly head. Speaking of which, the next episode on our list is The Flash, Season 3, Episode 4, The New Rogues. Barry continues to train Jesse, and when a new metahuman Mirror Master appears on the scene, he lets her tag along, but she defies one of Barry's orders, which leads to disaster. Meanwhile, Mirror Master teams with his old partner Top, and looks to even a score with Snart. And this episode came in at an average of 8.25. And I liked the new rogues, at least these new rogues. I liked the progression with Killer Frost. The new Harrison is interesting, although I will miss our old Harry. And, I guess the Barry Iris stuff is finally moving forward.
But whether Joe likes it or not.
Whether Joe likes it or not, yes. That is a really good point, and he doesn't. I enjoyed the various plots in this episode, but at the same time, I have to say it felt like there was a little bit of something missing out of it. A little bit. Not a lot, because...
Was Barry not suffering enough for this episode? Is that what...
Maybe.
Yeah, there's no angst, no...
Maybe it was the fact that I felt like there were some weird aspects of the whole Mirror Master thing. It didn't quite seem to add up right. And, yeah, I think they showed me Snart, and I kind of miss him. I needed more.
I was surprised to see Wentworth Miller back so soon. Even though we had reported weeks ago about his re-upping, so to speak, and that he could show up anywhere. And when they talked about him showing up anywhere, I wasn't expecting the Flash this soon. So that was unexpected. And he does do wonders for a scene. I enjoyed the Rogues a little bit more, I think. I enjoyed the interesting take on the Top's power, which is really not sort of like her comic book roots, but I thought it worked in a very nice way. Mirror Master, he is what he is, and there's a lot worse ways, and they even sort of joked, I think, was talking about on the other Earth, Mirror Master was with a gun.
Yes.
Originally, much like Captain Gold and Heatwave and a lot of Flash's rogues tend to have gun or weapon based powers. So I thought that was sort of funny. But Mirror Master is typically one of Flash's more dangerous rogues. So to introduce him this late was always a little bit of a surprise to me. I hope they can do things with him. In some ways, he should be one of his deadliest adversaries, so I'm hoping they can work him up to that level, maybe. So we'll have to see. I'm not completely encouraged, but at the same time, I know the potential the character has, so I hope they go with that. The Jesse Quick subplot, I'm not sure why it's there. I guess Barry needs a sidekick. I really didn't think he did. I always thought, everybody at Star Labs through his earpiece sort of was his sidekick through the radio connection. So to have somebody actually with him seems to be a liability, and this episode proved that out. And then finally, the one part that sort of has me squeamish and giddy and terrified all at the same time is this Killer Frost subplot. What's going to happen to Caitlin? Is she going to turn into that Killer Frost from Earth 2 that we met? Or can she actually control it and harness things and move forward with it? We'll have to wait and see for that. But that does have me the most anxious probably about any of the plots. And the Barry and Iris thing, give a guy a break once in a while. I'll give him a few episodes of happiness before something comes crashing down.
Yeah, I just think that Barry and Iris has been probably throughout the length of the series one of the weaker points. So even though this was more palatable, I do like to see my characters suffer, but at the same time I am a bit of a helpless romantic sometimes, so I do sometimes like those crazy kids to finally make it work. But I did like the way that they played it out here, because Joe's discomfort was kind of very logical to me. Not only that, but it was nice to be reminded that even though they're not in any way related, they were pretty much adoptive siblings.
So. Yeah, has anybody said, hey?
Yeah, exactly. Like,
you grew up together in the same house, and isn't this kind of weird?
Yeah, but I guess they know all of their foibles, I guess. but it worked out pretty well, and I enjoy it, because, an 8 is hardly a bad score. And it's just a little bit sloppy this time around, I think, but I'm really looking forward to the Killer Frost side of things. I really feel like this season is reinvigorated compared to the second season. I'm really interested in seeing what happens with the new Harry. All those other Harrys or Harrisons were really fun to see. That was a really entertaining little subplot there. So I think there were a lot of good elements of this episode. I just feel like they maybe could have come together a little bit better. But, minor differences probably.
Although I have to say Harrison was rather glib about, oh, let's find another one of me.
Yes.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, that's good.
It seems, though, that the DCW is on a roll this week because next on the list is Arrow, Season 5, Episode 3, A Matter of Trust. Green Arrow is forced to battle new drug dealer Garrett Reynolds, who is terrorizing Star City after Wild Dog strikes out on his own to take the dealer down, but quickly learns he's not up to the task. And this one came in at an average of 8.13, and Nadim said, giving it an 8.5, another week, another engaging hour, and a surprisingly amusing season. I gave it an 8, saying, who saw the return of anyone from Suicide Squad, even in these circumstances? But another episode with solid connections between past and present. I like that. The flashbacks matter again. And I feel like they are really capturing some of the better pieces of the first couple seasons again. You gave a similar, you and Edmund gave this a similar score, Gary.
Oh, yeah, no, I'm loving the flashbacks this season. As you said, they actually seem to fit. And that, you know, I feel like I'm getting a reason to have them, which is wonderful for a change. Also, I enjoy how, I'm glad how, can I call it Team Arrow? Or do they have another designation? Or
Close enough.
Team Arrow, the next generation?
Arrow 2.0?
Yeah, there you go. 2.0 are starting to really jive and come together, and then I feel guilty that I missed the original Team Arrow. So, also, I have to say, it feels like... Ollie's got it a little bit more together this season. Admittedly, there's still issues about the whole team coming together and stuff like that. But on the actual Oliver Queen side of things, it feels like he's starting to get a handle on stuff. And I like that. And I still miss Alicity. And they're sort of, you know, they keep peddling it back and it's going back. And it's they want it to pop back into like the early seasons groove between the two. But when they try to force that too much, it echoes a little false for me. They've had too much of a relationship to ever quite go back that far. At least that's how it feels to me. So,
Yeah, I don't think that they could, and I think that they're doing that in order to. At least in my opinion, they are trying to throw a little bit of a delay into any type of return to Alicity. If that makes any.
Or maybe it's not in front of the new team.
Yeah, right. Yeah. From the kids.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I have this feeling that they will eventually get to it, but they want it to feel earned, and I don't necessarily have a problem with that. I think that it does need to feel earned. It can't just feel like they force the relationship together, because that would be way too easy to do. I hope that they take their time, they let things play out. That would be fine with me. But as long as they eventually get somewhere, because I do feel like the chemistry is still there. So it would be a loss if they didn't allow it to play out. But I know other people who watch the show with me that feel very strongly that Felicity needs to be repaired now. So we'll see how soon that happens. The DCW seems to be doing pretty well. Arrow seems to be back on track. The Flash seems to have its act together. So that having been said, we don't have the other part of the DCW coming up next, but we do have another CW show. Supernatural, Season 12, Episode 2, Mamma Mia. Lucifer takes over the body of a rock star. Meanwhile, Dean, Castiel, and Mary try to rescue Sam, but Dean is uncomfortable with putting Mary in danger, even though she insists on going along. And I gave this episode an 8. Not even Rowena could take away from the gloriousness of Mama Winchester, the new Lucifer, and the Men of Letters intrigue. And not even the two writers that I don't like on this show could take away from this episode. So I'm really enjoying the new era. It is a little more stripped down, a little more laid back. Rick Springfield as the devil is an interesting turn of events, but it works. I didn't think it would, but it does. And I'm just really liking this episode or this season of Supernatural. I think that it is doing exactly what it needed to do, which was not trying to throw another apocalypse into the mix. They're just letting the universe kind of tell its own stories. And after 12 in its 12th season, what else are they supposed to do? So, kudos to Supernatural for not letting up after all this time. Next, we have Star Wars Rebels, Season 3, Episode 6, The Last Battle. On a salvage mission led by Captain Rex, the Ghost crew is captured by a unit of old battle droids determined to get one last battle to end the Clone Wars.
Roger, roger.
And this one also came in at an average of 8, and we had somewhat different opinions here. I thought it was a somewhat bland episode that was retreading stuff we've seen a million times before. You felt very differently.
I got the Clone Wars back for an episode. Woo!
Well, maybe that was the thing. I was saying, oh, here we go. We're just retreading the Clone Wars. And you're going, woohoo, we're retreading the Clone Wars.
You see, it's all how you say it. It's not what you say.
Right.
And no, I sort of liked it. And it, you know, it, while it did pay respect to the mother series of this show, I still have to say I liked it. It made us sort of polarize how different things are now than they were back then, as well as the fact that for one of the first times, I think everybody sort of admits that everyone's been manipulated. It always happened behind the scenes during the Clone Wars and even the first few movies. But now they see the sort of – we realize that everyone knows the larger scope of the plan, not just the audience who was watching the movies. And you know, that's sort of a realization too, and it definitely helps me understand some of the Rebels' worthiness to like risk everything that they have when they realize how every single person has been played by Palpatine. So, you know, I thought that was a good, you know, it was a good thing overall. And, I'll admit it was a little bit hokey, but at the same time, it was, it was fun to see the old battle droids and everybody, you know, up in action again. So I liked it.
Yeah. It's like I said, it just felt maybe overly familiar at this point. And especially with so many of the other episodes really focusing more on the current situation, it felt like a bit of a step backward, but I do understand they had an episode focused on Sabine. They had one that was focused on Hera, and now this one is focusing on Rex. And I guess if you're going to tell a Rex story that actually progresses his character a bit, what else are you going to do? But to me, it felt a little average compared to what we've had so far this season, but yeah.
And Rex, you know, so many times he sort of talks about the Republic in a romantic type of term, but as you reach the end of this, he almost wasn't. You could almost see that, like, you know, he was frustrated with everything as well. So that was, as I said, I felt it did sort of cap it off in the sense that everybody, as they said in the episode, everybody lost.
Yeah, that's true. But we balanced each other's opinions out, and it still came out at a pretty good score. So I think that Star Wars Rebels continues to impress.
Yes.
Next on the list, we have Ash vs. Evil Dead, Season 2, Episode 4, DUI. Ash hunts for his beloved Delta, but the tide turns and he becomes the hunted. Ruby and Kelly battle for the evil spawn, while Pablo is plagued by yet another Necronomicon condition. And this one came in at an average of 8, based on my score, because it pretty nicely delivered on the usual blend of ridiculous and buckets of fake blood. It was exactly what one expects from this franchise. And the development at the end with the Necronomicon actually looks like it's going to take this series and story into a new and unexpected direction, and that's always welcome.
Well, that's good, because I don't follow the series, but of the complaints that I've heard that it was it often said it doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah, and that was why it kind of lost me in the first season. So this season seems to be taking a very different tack, so we'll see. I mean, it could very well just start repeating itself yet again, and then I would be kind of bored after a while. But right now it seems to be giving me a little bit more to sink my teeth into. No deadite puns intended. Next, we have Berlin Station, Season 1, Episode 2, Lights Don't Run on Loyalty. Daniel tells Shaw, tails Shaw, as Frost and his associates collect intelligence on a Georgian Islamic radical. And this also came in at an average of 8, myself and Edmund both giving it 8. Solid intrigue, but I still feel like there's too many characters that look exactly the same, which makes it hard for me to follow everything, because it is such an intrigue, espionage-driven show. But I really like the actors in the show, and I really like where they're going with some of the story elements, so I'm going to keep up with it. Next, Gary, actually, you should take this one.
Oh, yes. Next, we're talking about Elementary, Season 5, Episode 3, Render and then Caesar. Holmes learns a secret about Captain Gregson's girlfriend when she hires him for a case she wants kept off of Gregson's radar. Meanwhile, Sherlock and Watson join the NYPD search for an abducted woman. This came in with an average score of an 8. And I really enjoyed the interaction between Captain Gregson and Captain Gregson's girlfriend and Sherlock Holmes. At first, he seemed rather sort of dismissive of her as the series was progressing, but now seems like he has an honest respect for her, and that was a nice sort of change and growth in his character. And I just really like seeing Virginia Madsen in this role. She handles it very well, and I hope she continues to be a recurring character on this series. That being said, the mystery of the week about the abducted woman was interesting, but I felt it was it had its moments of predictability. But as I said, I usually like any episode where Watson and Holmes are sort of on the same page and working together, and I felt that was the case in this episode. So I gave it an 8. Good, not great, but good.
Yeah, I'm interested in Virginia Madsen being on that show because she is also a regular on Designated Survivor. So, yeah, I guess she's doing double duty. I don't think that's on the same network, though, is it? No.
No, Elementary, CBS.
Right, so that's kind of intriguing.
Well, she and, I'm blanking out on the actor that plays Captain Gregson. Regardless, they've worked together on many projects over the years, so it wouldn't surprise me if somehow there's either a casting director in common, or they just ask each other, hey, why don't you hire this guy or this girl? I was looking at IMDb actually, because after I saw them in this, I realized they had been in something else together, and then when I actually looked, they've been in, I wouldn't call it a large number, but I think it was more than 4 projects together, so. So much like other actors, you find actors that you enjoy working off of, and it's a pleasure to do so with them again. So,
fair enough. All right, let's see here. Next on our list, excuse me, I have to try and get it to come back up. Thank you. Next on the list, we have Timeless, Season 1, Episode 4, Party at Castle Varlar. The trio land in Nazi Germany and track evildoer Flynn as World War II rages around them. They also meet the man behind a popular figure of literature, and they must endure a very uncomfortable party. That's saying the least. They should hook up with the folks from Legends of Tomorrow. It was just the theme that night, or that week, I guess. This one also came in at an average of 8. I give it a 7.5, and basically, hey, Nazis. It was good storytelling, but it kind of a little familiar. But how about you, Gary? You gave it a bit higher score.
Yeah, I liked it a little bit better. I took off 0.5 because why does time travel always have to involve Nazis? I'm just saying, there's other people that weren't so nice, or there were other people that were nice. So, always go to with the Nazi trope. Anyway, that being said, I actually like the sort of discussion about Wernher von Braun and what his purpose was. And I thought I don't actually know if it's true because I don't know enough about the man. Regardless, the character that was developed and portrayed as von Braun was quite interesting and slightly callous. But at the same time, he says, "I want to go to the moon. I don't care who it takes to get me there or who gets hurt along the way." And it was sort of a cold, objective thing, but it was nonetheless there, given how most people are such emotional about topics such as life and death and hurting other people along the way. And I found it really cool that Rufus wrote down what I'm assuming was a rocket escape trajectory formula on a little piece of a notebook and showed it to von Braun so that von Braun knew Rufus wasn't just an idiot. Mm-hmm. As he's talking, here's my validation. And even von Braun's looking at it for a second. He's like, geez. So he realized that he was, definitely a learned man, and that he should at least, listen to him. And I thought that was a lot of fun. As far as the villain, they keep going on that there's some higher purpose for this, all these changes and everything like that. So I'll have to see what, I still don't really see it laid out, but I'm still enjoying, an episode by episode sort of take on this. So if the larger plan unveils, so be it. If not, I'm still good. And finally, I love the little Ian Fleming cameo. I thought that was handled very well, and it was a lot of fun and a hoot. And I just applaud them for all the different puns that they that they kept laying down upon him.
Yeah, it was in classic Bond tradition, I suppose one could say.
And there was even some Bond teaser music at the end, if you listen. Just enough to not get sued.
Yes, I will give them that, certainly. yeah, I guess it just wasn't enough to really add too much to it. I kind of was hoping for a little bit more on that, actually. But maybe that was just expectations, you know. They can kind of get in the way sometimes. But there we are. Let's see. Next on the list we have... Come on. You can do it. Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Season 4, Episode 5, Lock Up. S.H.I.E.L.D. invades a high-security prison in search of secrets as Robbie Reyes tries to control Ghost Rider. And this one came in at an average of 7.83. And I gave it an 8, saying that I thought it gave some great character shading for Robbie and Director Mace, and some pretty good progression for Daisy as well along the way. Edmund also gave it an 8. You gave it a 7.5, so not too different, but what was your perspective on this one?
Well, the reason I ripped it to heck was...
terrible.
Was Director Mace, the whole Inhuman reveal seemed, number one, awfully early, given that S.H.I.E.L.D. has maybe been in public operation for a few months at best. Also, the actor delivered it horribly, in my opinion. It was so flat for someone who's, you know, coming out with his convictions and, you know, he wants to make a difference and he's going to show by him being the best person that Inhumans can be trusted. And it just sort of came back rather melancholy and it kind of unimpassioned and dull. So I blame the actor for that, not the script per se. What some other things about this? You know, Coulson tells Reyes to not go there, and he's like, oh, I'm just interested in vengeance. And he's like, there's a lot of people in there that need vengeance. And sure enough, he found somebody. Surprise, surprise, surprise. And we get to see that they've come up with a vaccine for the ghost touch, I guess it is. Mm-hmm. And that was sort of harkening back, in my opinion, to the, S.H.I.E.L.D. tech starting to pop up once more. We used to have a lot more of it, and it just seemed to go away. And now they're even hear them talking about icers again and all sorts of stuff. So it's like all the toys are coming back, which is always a nice thing. And then you have the whole Simmons plot, mm-hmm. with you know, her being so high up and not wanting to lie, and the whole little workaround for the lie detector test. And if I recall correctly, she was almost threatening the director with her knowledge, I guess, of him being an Inhuman. And now that he revealed it, I wonder what happens to some of her leverage.
Okay. Yeah, it wasn't quite that. What she was doing was alluding to the fact that she knew he wasn't telling the truth about what happened in Vienna.
Yeah, that he didn't save the people, really, or something.
Or something along those lines, yeah. And that was enough for him to back off. My problem with that, I actually did have a bit of a problem with it as well, although I didn't take quite as much off for it, was that it seemed to me like Mace maybe should have held on to that card a little longer. It seemed like he went right to it a little fast in terms of revealing his true nature, because, yeah, there were a lot of, there was probably a lot that he could have said or done before he went that far. And yeah. He could have...
Either that or save it for some critical moment or something. Yeah,
it just seemed like, wow, you went there already? Like, now you don't have that card to play anymore.
And it wasn't really played for much worth.
No, it really wasn't, because at the end of the episode, it basically put him in a more compromised position. So, yeah, I really wasn't 100% on board with that. It felt way too early. So I'm hoping that there is something more to it than that, that it's a little more complicated than that in the end. But yeah, it just felt like, wow, for a major plot point and a major secret, it took very little to get under your skin and force you to reveal your true nature. Beyond that, though, like you said, it probably wasn't too big of a surprise that there was something for Robbie to find in the prison. But I like the fact that they were peeling back the layers of his origins in that fashion rather than just ham-fistedly having an episode that was all about that too early. I think they waited until he was working with S.H.I.E.L.D. for it to kind of go into it so that it's not disconnected from what was going on with S.H.I.E.L.D. up to this point.
Yeah, and it was better than him talking with Daisy while he polishes the car or something like that.
Yeah, exactly. It made sense to do it then rather than in some earlier episode when they were apart. So, yeah, I thought they did some good choices there. Next on the list, we have Supergirl, Season 2, Episode 3, Welcome to Earth. Kara fears the recently escaped Mon-El is behind an attack on the president, who Supergirl and the DEO have been assigned to protect. At the same time, the hot-button issue of aliens versus human rights divides National City. In this episode, came in at an average of 7.75, and boy, did we have a lot of opinions this time. Nadim gave it a 6.5, saying, compared to the explosive two episodes that kicked off this season, this was a moderately entertaining yet highly flawed hour. Henry disagreed, or at least had a very different score, saying, with an 8.5. The series doesn't sit still for very long, which lends to some solid character and plot development in the meantime. While the metaphor can lack some nuance and land with a blunt thud at times, the episode works at a solid clip and pace. I gave it an 8, saying that this did have some nice expansions to the world of Supergirl, but the whole alien refugee concept was a bit on the nose. As in, punching you in the nose. Repeatedly. What did you think, Gary? I mean, you gave it an 8 as well, so I think you probably have at least a similar opinion to mine.
Yes, I did. Although I have to say the president was rather eloquent in her words, and I'm willing to give it a go. I mean, Linda Carter was great, you know, looked amazing, and definitely felt very comfortable in the role, and everyone seemed comfortable around her. The set must have been fun, I imagine. So I enjoyed that part of it. I enjoyed a bunch of it. I sort of questioned when the character introduced himself as Mon-El. Supergirl didn't even raise an eyebrow or go, huh, I guess L is as common as Smith or Jones. Well,
especially with the whole Daxam thing going on in the background, it's like, he just took the name of your house.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yes, and without even a remark, that that seemed kind of odd. And I have to say, I'm amazed how well and fast and perfectly executed this whole alien subculture was introduced through the bar scenes. I thought they really did well with that.
Yes, I agree.
Regardless of any other human interaction with it, I thought they reasonably presented it. It almost had a sort of a Men in Black kind of touch, but I don't think it was over the top the way that Men in Black typically portrays a room of aliens, which was good because these people are supposed to be fitting in Earth, at least in reasonably. So you couldn't have any crazy bodies or things like that. So I liked it a lot. I like the idea that, we have to know that there are a lot of aliens on Earth because we have the DEO to begin with. You know, that's not just for one or two random strays that happen through the atmosphere every few years. That's, there is an ongoing alien problem with on Earth. So they created this whole department and division that has caves and office buildings and all sorts of crazy resources to pull upon. Although the president said that, your mission is going to have to change. And I don't know what that's going to mean exactly. We'll have to see on that. So, that was fun. Geez, we have a few other subplots running. We had the whole Jimmy Olsen taking over head of Catco Media, I guess, and having a hard time getting a handle on things, where he's got to find his place as a leader of the organization above and beyond Kara's immediate boss, who seems like he's ready to take over yesterday. That was kind of enjoyable, and definitely puts a little color into Kara's civilian life, even though it doesn't seem as vibrant without Kat. But anyway, that's just me. Trying to think of any other good pluses or minuses. Again, Kara seems to exercise this sort of blindness once she makes up her mind that she really doesn't want to easily let in any other options or possibilities. For example, when they're mentioning the other alien race that they says, has fire powers and heat vision. And she's like, oh, yeah. Like, okay, wait, you know about another race and you're sure it's this guy.
Black and white with her in this episode.
This happens every once in a while for her anyway, and it's sort of slightly aggravating that they leave her so blindsided with it. And finally, I guess we can mention something about another new character that was introduced officially was Maggie Sawyer, who's a detective in National City. Now, from the comic book, she's in actually in Metropolis, and sort of is the same thing. She's in the, I believe they call it science unit or science division of the police to try and handle some of these aliens or other superpowered individuals. So I thought they introduced her very well, and I was a little surprised that they used her as, from what I hear, or at least was suggested, that she's going to be a lesbian and interested in Kara's sister. Now, where that goes, I don't know, although my curiosity is that they're in the Batman side of the DC universe, there is a detective who already is, you know, has been out as a lesbian for many years. And I'm a little surprised they didn't, want to tie in that aspect of the comic books as opposed to change the orientation of an existing comic book character. So just a little curiosity, but I'm fine with it either way. It's just, as I said, they had somebody in the drawer they could have pulled out just as easily, and they didn't. So it's a little odd, but I guess she's more Metropolis than Gotham, so they feel a little bit easier rating Superman shoebox.
What I find interesting there is that I could have swore somebody said that there were, and maybe they were reading into it, and this is just them feeling vindicated now, but I guess on Young Justice, they had Alex and Maggie Sawyer. Am I wrong on that one?
You might not be. I admit that do you mean the comic book series or the television series? The
television series.
See, I'm not sure.
I can't speak for it.
But I watched a fair amount of it, but I'm not saying no. It just doesn't ring a bell to me, so I'm not sure if it.
I felt like it came across pretty naturally. I mean, having the background, so it didn't. I didn't really have any reason to think, hey, maybe a different character would have worked. But I thought that they did a nice job, at least as good a job as they did introducing the bar with the aliens. And just as an aside for that one, what I thought was really kind of funny is that it reminded me of the old days of, like, Buffy or Angel, and the bar that would always be, like, the demon bar.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And it almost came across as, like, yeah, and here we have a show where we have the alien bar. And I was like, well, Trick from Lost Girl would love to trade stories with the bartenders, because there they have the Fae bar. And it's, like, it's a bit of a trope, but it works for a reason.
Well, you know, throughout a bunch of different storylines, there's always been what I'll call neutral territory.
Exactly.
Be it a church, or in many storylines, it is a bar or some social gathering place. So I'm fine with the trope. You know, I thought as long as it's pulled off well, and they did.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. I was just saying, it's just it is a trope because it usually allows the storytelling to work pretty well. In that regard, it gives you a kind of nice, isolated, kind of contained area for you to tell a lot of different stories. So I'm sure they're going to use that in the future to great effect, and I'm looking forward to it. This episode, just really, it was just the fact that they beat you over the head with the whole alien amnesty thing. I think that's what took a few people aback, and I think that's what took a little bit off. Otherwise, I feel like this would have been on par with some of the other shows that are in the DCW. I think that Nadim, for instance, really pointed that out as being a detracting element. It seemed like the whole amnesty thing was just a bit overdone.
Well, don't forget, too, that even though we did not see them in this episode, it definitely helps fuel Cadmus's anti-alien agenda.
It does. That is true.
So,
all right. Next on the list, we have a couple left here. Van Helsing, Season 1, Episode 6, Nothing Matters. Oh, nice existential episode. Mutated feral vampires chase Vanessa and Susan through the sewers, and at the same time, a hostile takeover of the hospital is underway. I give this one a 7.5. The seeds for the rest of the season are definitely being planted, but it felt like about half an episode being stretched out over the course of an entire hour. So, yeah, that took about half a point off just for that. It wasn't quite as egregious as, say, the Channel Zero episode that I mentioned last time, but it did seem like they are stretching out this part of the story here in the middle of the season a little bit much. And finally, we have The Vampire Diaries, Season 8, Episode 1, Hello, Brother. Season 8 begins with Stefan searching for Damon and Enzo after they mysteriously vanished months ago from the Armory Vault. Meanwhile, Caroline and Alaric fear that someone is targeting their family after they encounter an unexpected visitor. And I give this a 7.5. I thought it was a solid start to the final season with some pretty gruesome moments and some nice nuance with the new Big Bad's influence, but it still wasn't entirely clear where they were going with the story quite yet, so I still give it about a half point drop from the usual 8 that I typically give this show. It just seemed like it got off to a little bit of a soft start. But it is pretty solid considering that this is the final season and it's 8 seasons in. I don't think anybody was predicting that for The Vampire Diaries. Not even me. But that is it for this week. Like I said, I think we're only going to have the 2 episodes, and we're going to go ahead and let it ride there. Since we are a little bit busy, we're actually recording on a Sunday night, which is telling you a lot. So we both also need to cut this a little short. Gary, any last thoughts for this week?
No, I'm really enjoying that we have a most of our shows were 8 or above, which means we're getting good quality television, and the plethora of comic book related shows does this old fan a lot of good. I mean, we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 comic book related shows, you know, in our, it's about 20% of our shows are all comic book related. I never thought we would see that ever. Yeah, that's I take that back even more. So I mean, that's wonderful, and I'm glad that they're pillaging through my childhood and I can benefit from it.
Yeah, I mean, just to kind of name check them while I'm looking here, right. The Walking Dead is still comic book material. Luke Cage, Legends of Tomorrow, The Flash, mm-hmm. Arrow, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., Supergirl.
That's seven. Yeah, that's a third, actually.
A really big chunk. So, and those are some of our highest quality shows that we have out right now. So definitely can't complain.
Yeah, the DC may not be able to kill it on the big screen, but they're sure killing it on the little screen.
That is true. Yep. That is true. All right. Well, that having been said, I really don't have anything to add this time either. I know that we do have some feedback, but we're going to go ahead and let that wait until next time, because I think next time we might actually have Edmund back. Yeah. So I'm sure that he would like us to go ahead and wait to do the feedback until then. So what we will go ahead and do is wrap this one up. So thanks, everyone, for listening, and we will catch you next week. Until then.
And so ends another epic episode of The Critical Myth. If you want to leave a comment for this show, head over to vognetwork.com. Not only can you find links to the podcast version of each show, but there is a dedicated forum, a ton of written reviews, and related articles by the crew throughout the site. For the written reviews, you can even leave your own review, so let us know if you agree or not. You can also leave comments on our Facebook page, Critical Myth, on Twitter at Critical Myth, or Google Plus under The Critical Myth Show. Any and all use of copyrighted material is only intended for discussion, commentary, parody, or educational purposes, in accordance with U.S. Code Title 17, also known as fair use. In other words, please don't sue us. And of course, the statements and opinions of the Critical Myth crew are not necessarily those of the VOG network, its partners, or affiliates, but let's face it, we're probably right anyway. Until next time, watch, read, and listen, and believe in the critical myth.